Well, we're looking tonight at the, once again, the correlation that the prophet Habakkuk in chapter 3 and verse 15 uses to communicate power and what is powerful. And sometimes he'll compare the power of God's enemies. Sometimes he'll compare the power of God. But let me read the verse to you. Habakkuk 3, verse 15. You trampled the sea with your horses, the surging of mighty waters. It caused me to think about the fact that today, when somebody wants to explain power of machinery, they still go back to a horse. They call it horsepower. And so I looked this up, and here's what I found out. It says, from your car to your lawnmower to your snowblower to your chainsaw, the power of almost every engine you deal with is measured in terms of horsepower. None of these things seemingly have anything to do with horses. So where did that measurement come from? Well, actual horses. In the early days of the steam engine, inventor and engineer James Watt made some significant improvements to the Newcomen steam engine and attempted to market and sell his new version. This was easy enough when Watt was dealing with people who already had a Newcomen engine and could directly compare the output of the old engine to his models. Some potential customers didn't have a steam engine at all yet, though, and were still using draft horses to move weight and power machinery. He needed a way to explain the engine in terms that these people could understand. He worked out the idea of horsepower while watching some draft horses lift coal at a mine. In some versions of the story, he watched a horse turn a mill wheel. He determined that a horse could do 33,000 pounds of work in a minute. For example, move 330 pounds of coal 100 feet in a minute, or haul 33 pounds of coal 1,000 feet in the same time, and dubbed that one horsepower. He then used that as a way to make the apples to oranges comparison between horses and his machinery, and could say that a steam engine had power equivalent to X number of horses. Well, an analysis of this prayer shows, if you were to look back at verses 9 through 12, that it speaks of nature. And while verses 13 and 14 describe the opponents of the people of God, verse 15 once again returns to the theme of nature, particularly to the victory over the waters of the Exodus. And the entire verse describes the victory of God had over the enemies. Israel's victorious Redeemer in the past could be counted on to save once more a repentant and submissive people. If you look in the books of Samuel and the Kings and the Chronicles, you will see a pattern of repentance where God looks at man, and God never changes, but he's willing to change a direction because of the repentance of man. It's a good word for us. Well, Habakkuk had received his answer. God refuses to stand above this fray and watch as humans are having injustice put before them. He crosses into time and space and enter into this sinful messiness of human existence to save those who are most victimized by the world's ways. Then there's another reference to God's miraculous protective intervention on behalf of Israel at the Red Sea. And so this historical event demonstrates that he has sovereign ownership of the universe, and it gives this assurance to Habakkuk, who is just one troubled prophet, that the Lord could be counted on to save his people once more. You see, God will completely trample and drown the enemies of his people. Habakkuk came to realize that God is in sovereign control of everything, and he's in the process of leading evil and wicked into his destructive trap. Now, there are plenty of evidences that God is sovereign, that he has a judgmental side. So the question that I have for you today is, are you saved? These evidences of judgment in nature are chariots of salvation. So let me ask you again, are you saved? Have you personally believed on Jesus Christ? If you have, you have nothing to fear. But if you've not, every time you hear thunder or see lightning or hear of a hurricane or a tornado, that should shake you up, because that's nothing compared to the lake of fire, nothing compared to hell. And I don't think it's wrong for us every now and then to point to those things, because those are warnings. Those are things that God has put into place, and he promises help to those that call on his name.